mail for the kitty. Oh, Sprinkles, come here. You've got a delivery. Meowbox.com is a subscription crate service that is designed for our kitty friends in mind. Meowbox.com offers a selection of hand-picked tasty treats and new good foods and some fun little toys for them to enjoy. Meowbox.com donates a can of food to local animal and rescue shelters on your behalf when you sign up. A variety of different subscription options can be found at Meowbox.com, and don't forget to use promo code GEEK10 to get 10% off your first subscription. Isn't that great, Sprinkles? Mail that comes to the door, and it's just for you. Meowbox.com is a proud sponsor of ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back. They're gonna save the world of geeks. Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back. They're gonna save the world of geeks.
Hey guys, how's it going? You are listening to This Week in Geek, and this is the topic show for the month of July. That's right, I am back. I am your... am I your ghost master? Am I your host? This isn't Terrible Warrior, so I'm not actually dungeon mastering or game mastering Ghostbusters. I'm just here to talk about it, so I guess I'm your paranormal investigator, because I actually have the certificate of completion on my wall. I think it's actually kind of cool. But I'm not alone as I trek through this journey through the paranormal. I am joined with...
Andrew Slimer Roebuck.
Oh, jeez.
That was inspired, Andrew.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I would have went...
That's way better than Randrew.
Okay, whatever, Ryan Ectoplasmic... Merkley.
Wow, gee, thanks.
The
ectoplasm was way better. Wait a second, you thought I was being sarcastic. Oh man.
Oh, I didn't think you were being sarcastic.
Wow.
But I'm joined with clearly my other paranormal investigators here, because hey, we are ready to believe you. And this is a franchise that Twig has taken on a number of times, and we always seem to get really interesting feedback from the community for this, namely the Ghost Head community, which is what I turned out that's what Ghostbusters fans call themselves. I'm very new to having this fandom name applied to how I feel about it, because I've always just assumed Ghostbusters were just Ghostbusters, right?
I thought it was misogynists.
Which we are going to get into that. We will be getting into that today as we talk about the online backlash this film has gotten, or this franchise has gotten, especially in the last year or so. But we're also going to talk about the classic films as well, the comics, the cartoons.
Whoa,
the
there
video
were films
games.
Before this one?
There were. In 1984 and 1991.
I thought they had been erased.
What about the one with the gorilla?
Oh, the one from 1975. And the Filmation one.
I grew up on the Filmation show. I remember it quite well.
I actually really like the toys from the Filmation one. Actually, they were superior to the Kenner ones. But we'll talk about that later. But I do have to thank a number of people who actually helped make this show possible. Big thanks to Sony Pictures, who let us into the press screening for this the Monday that the film opened, which was really nice of them. We also got support from Insight Editions for sending us the ultimate visual history for the Ghostbusters, which is really, really cool. They also sent me a copy of Tobin's Spirit Guide, an invaluable resource for our Ghostbusters video game. Nerdyshow.com, who actually sent us their updated version of the Ghostbusters role-playing game, which we're actually playing right now on Terrible Warriors. You'll hear more about that in September. I also got a mini proton pack from Running Press, which is exactly what it is. It's a mini proton pack. It lights up and makes sounds. It's actually kind of cool. And is in scale with the Mattel figures. So if you're... If you're feeling particularly inventive, you can actually take off the proton pack and mount it and actually have one that lights up with the neutrino wand and everything else. But anyway, trying to think if there's anybody that I missed. Oh, yes, Mattel. Mattel sent me a crap ton of toys for this. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to review the Trap playset, which is meant for the mini Ecto figures. It just didn't arrive in time, unfortunately, but I did manage to get the Proton pack itself, and I did get all the figures for the movie except for Roam, but I do have the buildable one. So I'll talk about that, as well as the Kenner merchandise and other things that have popped up over the last couple of years, to going all the way back to vintage stuff, because while doing some research for the show, I found out some really interesting stuff about merchandising and this particular franchise. In fact, the fan club was started by just a couple of random people who bought the rights from Columbia for $10,000, which I found that was kind of cool. And there's a little bit more to that story, but I'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. Now, normally we would do just the facts for this, but it's the story everybody knows. We know that Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis wanted this to be something a little bit more akin to a time travel adventure film called, I think it was called Ghost Mashers, where they actually use magic wands and travel through time and actually stop ghosts at different points throughout history. And Ivan Reitman said, nope, that is not going to happen. I don't have $1 billion. And hence we got the reworked paranormal film we got in 1984, where three scientists were kicked out of Columbia University, and the rest is, as they say, history. So I guess let's kind of start this with memories everybody has of the franchise, and I'm just going to kind of lead us off here so you guys can think about it. Ghostbusters introduced me to the world of video piracy, thanks to my mom and dad. My mom and dad were wanted to be hip like the next-door neighbors and got VCRs. So that should tell you about when my tale starts. So back in 1985, I want to say, maybe 86.
Damn, I was going to say 2012.
But although the last company producing VCRs just stopped, I think, this last week.
True.
Figure that one out. But so my parents got two VCRs, and my parents were very much hands-off in how they raised me. I was raised by your local convenience video store. And the first movie I remember them ever dubbing for me was Ghostbusters. And this is a tape I wore down so quickly because I watched it so often. And then I would get into the ABC cartoon, which wouldn't premiere until, I want to say, 1986 or 87, which was called The Real Ghostbusters. And I just remember just being utterly enthralled with the idea of these scientists who were just ordinary dudes fighting ghosts. But the idea, because I was always one of those kids that was very curious to look beyond what it was, and the idea was, okay, they're scientists that fight ghosts, which means they accept the idea of a life after death. Science implies that no, it's real, it's true, which means, to me, this is a world where life after death is just accepted. No one bats an eye at it. Although, in the Ghostbusters show, arguably, they didn't fight a lot of dead people. They fought more a lot of spiritual monsters or demons or, I guess, just goopy bad guys as opposed to like anything else. But I remember that really piquing an interest in me to get involved in other science and stuff, to start reading more about the world around me. And I very much kept the academia interest in science because of Ghostbusters, and that kind of led me down the road to more kind of metaphysical stuff, rather. I remember watching a show on Fox Television called Sightings, and for those of you that don't know what that is, it's a show that would focus on the paranormal, like ghosts, aliens, etc. I was always more interested in the ghost stuff because I do have a fair number of paranormal experiences, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the show, though I know I'm alone on this one. And, you know, as the tagline says in the movie, we're ready to believe you. And whether you guys believe me or not, that's up to interpretation. I will not take offense if you do not.
I'm haunted by my past.
Oh, and it doesn't slime you. Well, if it does, you.
Well, actually, this one. Oh, sorry, anyway.
I guess the next question is, let's talk about your guys' memories. Where do they start for you? And Ryan, well, let's go with you.
Well, 2016 being the only time Ghostbusters ever was released, there's not many... Oh, sorry. I guess I'll stop that act now. Oh, boy. I definitely remember the animated series, which ran from 86 to 91. Oddly enough, my first exposure to something JMS worked on. Joe Michael Straczynski, for anyone who doesn't know. Anyway, as for the films, I only vaguely remember when I first saw the live-action movies. And I saw the first one first and the second one second, so presumably it was before the second came out. But my childhood is mostly a mess, so I don't really remember exactly when. I remember watching the animated series more. That one being the real Ghostbusters, not the one we referred to earlier, although I do remember it as well. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of my franchise memories and that kind of thing, it starts much older, really. Mm-hmm. And I've got Ghostbusters 1 and 2 on DVD. I've had them for quite some time. I did originally see them on VHS. Andrew, VHSs were these cassette things.
I own like 12 in my room right now.
You were
more
able
like 40
to record
actually.
Things. It was neat because you could record
this year.
Things before. And
I own hundreds. Shut up.
Anywho. No, I mean, I remember those. I remember the video games as well. The Ghostbusters video games, really, until, you know, fairly recently, did not have a good reputation, and it was mostly deserved. I never got to play the good one. I still remember seeing shots of the Genesis titles and stuff in magazines, but nobody I knew owned it. I don't think I ever got to play it. Actually, I know I never got to play it again until fairly recently.
Yeah, so, yeah. I remember the Genesis game being ridiculously hard to find. I think I've seen it in the wild once.
Maybe. I mean, I grew up out in the boonies, so, like, you know, if something wasn't super mainstream or nobody went and bought it, they, you know, I just never got to play it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't have a whole lot of memories of it, oddly enough. I mean, I remember watching them, I remember the films well and everything else. I don't have the massive attachment to what a lot of the fans have, but you can say that about most things, so.
All right, Andrew, what about yourself?
Well, I was introduced to it as a young age, even though both of
Last
you were
week,
still...
this year.
Yeah, both of you were old while I was still young, but anyways. it was something my parents introduced to me because they knew I liked paranormal and I liked effects comedies because I was a big fan of things like Godzilla. So the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man was something my parents obviously knew that I would enjoy. So they showed me the original movies and we got them both in like one of those 2-pack DVDs. I saw it before DVD. I did see it on VHS as well. But it was something that I treasured in my childhood because it also came with this really cool behind-the-scenes booklet, and it was one of the first times that I ever got interested in how they created a film and how they did all the effects. So it was one of the first movies that really started my film mania. And when I had a Halloween party in grade 8, it was the movie that I made sure to show to all my friends and make them watch. And I ended up introducing a lot of people I know to Ghostbusters. I have people to this day who's like, yeah, the first time I ever experienced the movie was from you. So it's kind of one of those franchises that I've always had a soft spot in my heart. And yes, I do quite enjoy the second one, and I did quite enjoy the new one. And I even enjoyed the cartoon show, but I didn't get to see a lot of the real Ghostbusters. I never saw the Extreme Ghostbusters, but the real Ghostbusters I used to watch on Boomerang whenever I went to go visit my uncle for Thanksgiving. He had Boomerang, so I used to just obsess and watch all of his old cartoon shows, which for you were just normal cartoon shows, because you're all old. Ah!
Thanks for that, Roebuck. I definitely appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I've always maintained an attachment to this franchise, and I guess a lot of it has to do with my parents, and I didn't realize so much how connected I was to it until after my, like, mom died back in May. I just realized every birthday when I was a kid, I always got Ghostbuster stuff, and my real mom... For those of you that don't know, I'm adopted. My real mom, before I knew who she was, gave me a cassette tape, and the first present she ever gave me was the Ghostbusters 2 franchise, was the Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack, which I actually still have to this very day. And I was actually watching Ghostbusters 2 the other day, and you know what? I think that movie gets a bit of a bad rap. Although I would argue it may be the worst in the Ghostbusters franchise.
I don't think that's an argument, first of all. Second of all...
Well, you know what?
Let's just be blunt. It's a remake of the original without any of the good elements.
I don't think it's that bad. I like the core message of the film, because I like that it's more about a film about positivity and about not being super negative. And it's a colorful film, and it's a fun film.
Obviously, the Ghostbusters fans really got that message.
No, that was kind of going to be my joke. I do think that I did like the new movie better than the second movie, but the second movie still has a special place in my heart, because I do still think it's a fun movie. But that's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm. But there's, like, certain things about the franchise that I've always just kind of loved, especially with the second one. I liked how we saw more of their gear, and that's one of the things I've always been a huge fan of with the Ghostbusters franchise, the fact that their gear looks like it's stuff you could literally find in the real world, so to speak. In fact, there's a quote out of the back of that visual, or the ultimate visual history for the Ghostbusters from Insight. It says, anybody with a reasonable technical knowledge and $150 and a jumpsuit can put together a good Ghostbusters costume. That really kind of impresses me, actually. The fact that you can do that. And the fact that Ghostbusters costuming is such a thing, and it's so easy to put together packs and put together slime throwers and put together traps, and even ecto goggles aren't even all that hard to build as well. But anyway, to get back to the films, I saw the original one in theaters when I was in college. I don't think I ever saw the second one in theaters, and it was a big deal for me to see the new Ghostbusters movie in theaters when it came out just a couple of weeks ago. And I'm not above sharing this. I actually, when I went to see the new movie, I saw it with my wife Blair near Andrew Roebuck's. I guess it's virtually in his backyard, a little place called Chatham.
Ugh.
Which he hates. I loved it there, but anyway. Went there, and I actually teared up seeing the movie. The first time they have on their gear, their packs, they're getting ready to fight the big ghost at the concert hall, and it was just something that I didn't know whether I'd ever see another Ghostbusters movie on a big screen again, because I just wondered, with Harold Ramis passing away back in 2011, I want to say, or was it 12? Whenever he passed away, I wonder if just that was it. That's it. We're not going to see it again.
Ramis passed in 2014, by the way. Very recent.
Well, I thought it was a lot longer than that, but nope. But yeah, but when he passed away, I kind of assumed, okay, that's it. It's over. And when I saw that, it really just kind of got to me and just kind of connected that, you know what, maybe the kids that are growing up now will have the same experience I did. This is their Ghostbusters, and there's a great picture online that someone made, and says, "We are all Ghostbusters," and it's got the original cast, the Extreme Ghostbusters, the video game, even the Filmation Ghostbusters, the new movie one, and ones from the comics as well. And it really kind of touched me. And there's another article, I want to say, one of my friends who is one of the producers on Robot Chicken, Dan Milano, and he wrote something, but the line that stuck with me the most was, it, this is the thing I can bring my kids do. This is a thing. This can be their Ghostbusters for their generation. And I never understood why a lot of the fandom that I now associate myself with was so against this. Why this movie in particular is so sacred, so much so that it can never be touched. And I like the original movies, 1 and 2, because let's be frank, they both of them have their flaws. And if you look at some of the characters in them, Venkman's kind of a creep when you really think about it. And that's okay, because he's a caricature, right? That's just, that was the humor in the 1980s. You're not gonna, you can't get away with that shit now, obviously, right? Because half, like, hell, if you look at Revenge of the Nerds, when the when Schofield sleeps with that girl and she doesn't know that it's another guy, you know, that's rape. That's not cool. And one of the things that someone pointed out to me recently,
I don't think Venkman ever rapes anyone. Let's just be clear. I don't think
hold
it's that
on. Well, he shows up.
He's very stalkerish and creepy, though.
Yeah, and he does show up to Dana's apartment with 300.
He's the first MRA. If he had had a fedora, he would have been an inspiration to millions, sadly.
M'lady. Oh, that's terrible. But yeah.
That's not fair.
But even still, you know what? It is what it is. It's a product of its time. And you look at these new movies, and I think Women Scientists, I think that that's a great, wonderful role model there. And there's, I can't remember what the name of this is called. There's like a test movie has to pass.
The Bechdel test?
Yeah, and Ghostbusters passes it with flying colors.
Well, yeah.
And I'm just thinking, wow, it's never kind of, it just never kind of clicked with me. Then there was a mutual friend of ours who shall remain nameless.
Batman.
Was bitching about how he doesn't like how Chris Hemsworth's character is a complete idiot in the movie and is there to be eye candy. But say, yet if this person was a woman, none of us would give a crap.
I don't think he's just, I think the, I don't know, it was funny.
I thought it was bloody brilliant.
Yeah, no, I thought his role was not like.
Yeah, to be fair, he thought Hemsworth was terrible in it, and he's completely wrong.
He stole the show.
Yeah, Hemsworth was solid with what he had to do. I think his stuff was a little simple, but saying that is a disservice to Hemsworth's ability in terms of delivery and everything else. Like, comedy is not easy.
No.
Comedy is debatable. Most people would say it's the hardest form of acting.
Well, yeah, because you either have it or you don't.
Yeah, and I mean...
Go ahead. I was going to say, honestly, I was going to say that he has some of his jokes are some of my favorite in the movie. Just some of his subtle, like,
my
movements
cat.
And yeah, and, like, just his line delivery. And like, there, I think my favorite part is when he has the glasses on and then he just scratches the side of his eye and like, you just realize that he doesn't have real glasses. Mm. And he just took the lens. I thought it was really funny. So it worked.
Getting back to like, what Mike said, just quickly and briefly, and I don't know, maybe trying to end it off, I guess. But anyway, I went through this with Star Trek, which is a franchise I'm really close to. I mean, I forget stuff daily. You know, I forget more daily than most Trek fans are going to know. And it's one of the best lines anyone had came from a podcast called Trekcast. Talking about the 2009 reboot. And this line can be applied over and over again to any franchise pretty much ever. And that was, it may not be Star Trek for you, but it's Star Trek for somebody.
Absolutely.
And Ghostbusters is the exact same. And to be blunt, you know, people need some form of representation. And women have been underrepresented in comedy and in action. And, you know, the sort of a merger of those two for basically ever. And you're talking about more than half of the population. And, yeah, Janine was, you know, a side character, but I do remember people being excited when she finally, you know, got to do stuff, but it didn't happen an awful lot. And so, I don't know, I thought it was a step forward for that. And I guess, you know, just going straight into it, a lot of the hate wasn't deserved.
Yeah, I mean
it just came off as petty and childish because nobody could come up with reasons. And if you want to say the trailer wasn't good, that's fine, because I don't think the marketing for this film was good. All apologies to everybody involved, because I know a lot of work went into it. You know, trust me, as somebody who does, you know, is a professional reviewer, I'm well aware a lot of the work that went into it and any other film, but you want to say that, that's fine, but it's not an excuse to hate it this much, that the level that people have given it, it's not even close. I mean, it's the most disliked, the trailer is the most disliked video on YouTube, And I have a couple of big problems with this. I'm just going to flat out say it. Ghostbusters is a good franchise, but it's not a particularly popular one. We're not talking Star Trek or Star Wars. And in terms of the vitriol and the amount of people that came out of the woodwork and decided, hey, I'm going to really care about Ghostbusters today, that was odd. And the next sort of oddity is random keyboard typing. But the oddity after that is it's not even close to the worst trailer on YouTube. I'd argue it's not even the worst trailer in the franchise. The trailer for the 84 Ghostbusters was not good. I don't know how anybody could watch that trailer and go, man, this would be a really good movie.
Well, it's funny. I got into a huge argument with someone. I was actually talking with Patton Oswalt over Twitter, and I'm like, have you seen the trailer to the original Star Wars? That was friggin' atrocious. And I had every, like, MRA jerk-off or whoever just jumping down my throat at me saying, this movie's terrible, you're a shill.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as my reviews got posted, again, I don't post under my own name, but anyway, the first person said, which was fantastic, that I was on Sony's payroll, which is amazing because aside from The Shallows, I haven't been super complimentary of Sony films this year. No offense to them, but it doesn't deserve anywhere near the vitriol, though. And, you know, we're talking, like, most disliked video on YouTube. That's significant.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's weird because you'd think more people would be mad at World of War, at Warcraft being disappointed, or X-Men Apocalypse being
The other example delivered. I'd use is, what about, you know, we're talking about films with bad trailers that are more indicative of the product, we'll say. What about every, you know, you can't watch a trailer for a Michael Bay movie and tell me, like, oh, this is fine. Are you kidding?
The only
Know how those movies turn out.
I can think of two Michael Bay movies that turned out okay from the trailers, but they're all pre-2000.
Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. And, oh.
I would argue The Rock and Armageddon.
I will punch you in the face, Roebuck.
the best film of the franchise.
Age of Extinction. Not only that, but the best story in all of Transformers, and way better than James Roberts' work. Yeah, yes. Anyway. No, I mean, it's obviously people's expectations and people's opinions on what constitutes quality is going to be very different, especially with a comedy. I think that's something we'll get into, is that comedy is really subjective. So I can understand a certain amount of it, but the problem has been, I won't throw names out here. Heck with it. The problem has been, the reasons for disliking it have been exceptionally nebulous, which I find amusing because there's somebody who works with another person who we who is constantly talking about how, well, you know, these reviews don't say anything, and all the positive reviews, you know, are very sort of tenuous at best. My problem with that is this film's a comedy where your review is going to be tenuous no matter what. With a comedy, the basis of it is either the jokes hit or they don't. That's your review. Like, I have the hardest time writing full reviews for comedies because there's only so many different ways you can say that. There's certain aspects you talk about. But honestly, plot doesn't matter in a comedy if the jokes are good, because the comedy's scope is to make you laugh. I mean, is there a plot in a 1.5-hour stand-up? No. The guy's goal is to make you laugh. And films are not an awful lot different from that. So the onus in terms of proving your point isn't on the positives in that area. It's on the people who, you know, watched a 1-minute snippet of a film and decided it was the worst thing of all time.
Yeah, like,
which it's not even close, by the way. If you watched this movie and you hated it, and you say this is the worst movie you've ever seen, you have not seen many movies.
Yeah, clearly. But so yeah, like, I mean, that's what I don't get, though. Like, why? Like, it's this small vocal minority that seems to speak for a majority of the fandom. That bothers me too. is that people were like, oh, God, it's so terrible, but it's really not. I mean, you could argue some of the jokes don't hit, which is fine.
Yeah, and that's something I will say.
There are parts that are derivative of the first movie. That's okay. You're establishing a franchise. You're going to have to. But overall, I was entertained. I gave it a solid 7 or 8 out of 10. I thought it was great. In fact, I'm probably going to go see it again. Actually, if this podcast wasn't running as late as it was, I was going to go see it again tonight. But yeah, I mean, arguably, it's a fun movie, and it presents positive role models. Like, one of the things I really liked about the new movie, it's the pursuit of science. In the original movie, it's them pursuing a quick buck. Because Venkman's character openly says, the franchise rights alone will make us millions. In this one, you got Yates, who is McCarthy's character, and Gilbert, who's Kristen Wiig's character, saying, we want to prove this is real. We want to prove that we're not crazy, that this is really real. And the idea is to prove that the science is solid, to them to prove to these universities that you threw us out for no good reason. You're wrong.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that was developed in the script naturally and how much of that was added after the whole controversy came up. Because I would like to see the script pre the trailer being released to see if it's the same as it was post the trailer being released, because there are a lot of jokes that I thought worked well, but a lot of the movies seem to be based around the negativity that was occurring within the fan base, because there's a lot about just proving themselves as both scientists and both as people who are competent in doing things and not hoaxes and that kind of thing, and that's a lot of what was being pushed by people who were negative against the movie. So I wonder how much they adapted the script post people going crazy, or if people are being assholes, because guess what? They're probably right. People are always assholes.
Well, I guess as we move into more like discussion about the movie, I mean, Mike, you mentioned that one of your big things was the plot, or the theme behind it. For me, the discussion of why I ended up liking it really begins and ends with the cast, particularly Kate McKinnon, who, my God, I could watch her for 2 hours in pretty much any movie, and she would probably improve it. I was really impressed with her. I have not
watched... Leslie Jones impressed me.
Really? I have not watched a lot of Saturday Night Live, so I don't have a lot of exposure, especially to McKinnon. And I was super impressed. And this is a good cast, by the way. I mean, you've got Charles Dance, whose name I finally got right, for example, playing, not a reasonably major role, I guess. You know, you get Chris Hemsworth on as well. I mean, and then the four leads, who are fairly well known, they managed to get a good cast together.
Mm-hmm. There was the only person I felt that was wasted would maybe the main bad guy, and that would be Rowan. And I know he's done some stuff for Saturday Night Live. I think he's primarily a writer on that show. A little
Neil
wasted.
Casey, by the way, is the actor's name.
Yeah,
I've seen him in a couple things, and yeah, I can't place him.
Yeah, like I think maybe he was maybe a little wasted. I mean, one of the things I'm looking forward to coming out of this is in about 5 years, there's going to be a really good documentary about the behind the scenes of this movie.
I'm hoping the emotion has kind of subsided by then, by the way, because if you were to do it right now, as I hate to say it, it would be pretty
one-sided.
It would be one-sided, and B, I feel like it'd be lost.
Yeah, because it would get lost in under all the noise. And it's not to say there aren't good Ghostbusters documentaries. There's actually a really good one on the disc for Ghostbusters 1 about restoring the Ecto-1. There's another one on the Ghostbusters 2 talking about just the behind the scenes of the movie. And then there's this one. A friend of mine actually produced this. Adam Goldberg, the guy that is the basis of the Goldberg Show on ABC, co-produced a documentary called Ghost Heads, which is about the fandom of Ghostbusters, which is like, it's like an hour and a half long, and it's a really good look inside the positive side of that fandom.
Well, going back to the Star Trek analogy as well, this is something I went through with it again, and that is in 2009 when it came out, the resulting influx of new fans to the original series and the original Star Treks. First of all, the discs and everything else, sales just shot up to the point that if there was any sort of reluctance to consider Blu-ray as a viable option for future Trek releases, that got shot out the water immediately because people were buying these up like crazy. Second of all, I read, you know, Star Trek magazine and a lot of other of publications about it. The influx of people emailing them or writing them and asking, hey, I watched the movie, I really liked it, or I had a lot of fun, which episodes of the original series or Next Generation would you recommend? And I mean, every month there were at least two or three people who had letters like that that they would answer. And those are just the ones that got published. And not to mention people who wrote in. Like, everywhere people were interested in this. And in terms of Ghostbusters, I don't know that Ghost Heads actually gets made without this film's existence.
Yeah, I mean, if it did, I mean, it would be a small Indiegogo release or be something that appears on Netflix that you might find out about. I mean, it needed this. I mean, they actually talk about the new Ghostbusters movie in Ghost Heads. I mean, Paul Feig has a little bit of a part in it. They also talk about one Ghostbusters superfan spends his 30th birthday at the firehouse when they shot in New York at like Ladder 8, and he got a chance to see the new Ectomobile before anybody else. But yeah, like, without this movie, this documentary does not have the same punch. And it's also very surprising how much of a Canadian connection there is to this film as well. They talk about there's a Ghostbuster from BC who travels all around the world, collects all the different patches. They talk about the original Ghost Head. I think his name is Peter Mosen, is a guy who just dressed up at the first movie and managed to turn that into a career. He's actually one of the people in the restaurant in Ghostbusters 2 who gets purple mood slimed when they come in to go visit Venkman and Dana. So there is so much good in the fandom, but we only ever seem to hear about the negative, which is really unfortunate. And speaking of merchandise, I really wanted to kind of talk about this too. Not just to talk about the specific types, but everybody thought this movie failed because Target was clearancing Ghostbusters merchandise. And I wanted to address this because I think the merchandise of this movie just came out too soon, and the marketing wasn't matching up with what it was being presented. With that first trailer, it didn't wow people, as we've discussed. And it wasn't necessarily aimed at a kid audience either, too. And neither was the original movie, to be sure, because you don't have an accompanying cartoon to go with it. I mean, think about how many tie-in merchandise things you really see nowadays. Unless it's Marvel or DC, you don't see it. So a Ghostbusters toy line had a lot of problems going in against it. Now, luckily, the line has been fairly successful, according to, I want to say, it's either Hollywood Reporter or Variety, had said, yeah, the toys are moving great. We're probably going to do more stuff in the future. And I really hope that they do. But everybody online was like, oh, they're clearancing this stuff. Blah, blah, blah. We gotta sell it. Like, yeah, because the toy caps still have to move, man. Doesn't matter if the movie's successful or not. If you got product that's just sitting there not moving, or you have too much of it, you gotta get it out. That's business. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the criticism leveled at it, too, was people saying that, like, oh, look, it was already on. They were already on clearance reasonably quickly, but that happens to most toy lines right now. I mean,
and especially a movie toy line, because movie's only in theaters for, what, 4 weeks?
Yeah, but I mean, Transformers is a good example. I mean, new lines of that have recently been coming out in the last little while for Combiner Wars and Titans Return and everything, and they've pretty much perpetually been on sale here in Canada. I don't think it has anything to do with actual sales. A lot of it, too, is you got to keep those shelves moving. And especially for films, you've only got a certain amount of time to move the merchandise before, oops, movie's not in theaters. So, you know, what are we going to do with all this stuff if you're a store and you've only got a certain amount of shelf space? So, there's that, yeah.
Yeah, like, it's just, it's weird. Now, I do have some problems with the marketing and the merchandise for this, only because I want to see the line be more successful, but with them talking about a new Ghostbusters animated series coming out, I want to say next year, maybe we'll see more stuff on shelves. Which, I guess now is probably a good time to move into another point of this, and I really want to talk about some of the other things that have involved with the franchise. And
I was
that's
done talking about the movie.
The movie, well. all right, well, let's wrap up our thoughts on the movie, then I want to talk about the cartoons, because there has been a few.
Just in terms of the film, I mean, the overall feeling I got from it was fun, and it was funny. Like I said, I haven't made it a secret that I loved Holtzman's character and McKinnon's work as the character. I thought Hemsworth was pretty solid as well. And, you know, Kevin got a decent number of the lines. Yeah, the villain wasn't great. And I think the two things that kind of disappointed me are the third act, because
you could tell stuff was cut.
More that I think we've been spoiled in the last little bit with the Russos and some others. The Russos, for anyone who doesn't know, didn't have any experience doing action sequences, and they've directed some amazing action sequences. I thought the sequences in this film were not great, and, you know, Feig's lack of experience there kind of showed a little bit.
Yeah, because there is some inconsistency, and this is where I show my ghost nerdity. Like, the proton packs are meant to capture the ghosts. In the Times Square scene, they're clearly destroying them. But I can even find an in-world explanation for that if you really, really wanted me to. Where they basically just have the stream on them too long.
I just say they got built differently.
Yeah, well, it's weird because
magic.
Well, they do talk about in the original Ghostbusters how the trap and hold a ghost involves stripping it of all of its protons, right? With this one, I could believe they just strip off too much to make them incorporeal again. They have to wait for the charge to rebuild. So the ghost is gone, but it's not gone. You know what I mean? You're just moving that energy to a different state.
Not going to lie, it didn't bug you me. I mean, I can tell you how a warp core works, but I don't care if they change it for the new movies.
Yeah, that's kind of sad.
Well, it's inconsequential to the overall plot.
But like, I've had people bring that up as an argument against me.
No.
Which is stupid.
The only other thing I'd say about it, too, is some people say, like, oh, my favorite line from a fellow critic at the screening I was at was one person complaining that the ghosts didn't look real. And I yelled at him and said, really? How about you show me a picture of a ghost, then? The ghosts don't look real. It's a stupid complaint, people.
Yeah, there's another line I heard about how the ghosts don't look as good as the 84 version. And obviously, this is where I get blasphemous. In the original 84 version, the only ghost I thought that looked cool was the cab driver ghost. And that was because he looked like a zombie.
I think people have also forgotten that the 84 movie has been touched up over the years. You're not necessarily seeing the same version people saw. And I think for the people who have original VHSs, that...
Well, yeah, because
it'll look different than it does now.
Yeah, because even the Shandor, I want to say the librarian ghost, the wife of like Evo Shandor, you see her eyes more defined when she transforms into her monstrous form. In the original, you didn't see that because that detail was washed out at 480i or whatever the hell it was back in the day.
240 no, I don't know.
Yeah, but yeah, like honestly, Stay Puft looked cool. Gozer looks stupid. I'm sorry. It's a woman in a bubble outfit. It looks dumb.
What about the doggies?
The terror dogs look
good. Wait, they're called the terror dogs?
Yeah, they're Vince Clortho and
I miss stop motion, so I'm not really going to have anything negative to say about that. I mean, it doesn't look great, but
it works for the time.
Stop motion is an excellent art form that I wish got used more often. Same with practical effects, which, by the way, people complain that, like, oh, they didn't use practical effects in this Ghostbusters, but I've seen the same people bitch about Mad Max, which was all practical effects and looked fantastic and is amazing, and they're terrible human beings. My second issue with it, by the way, is just, and this is a testament to the fact I did enjoy this movie, despite the fact I've got negative things to say about it. My other negative is I wish it had distanced itself more from the originals. The cameos to me didn't necessarily add anything. I thought Murray of the Batch, although part of that's because he got the longest amount, I thought Murray's of the Batch was the best of the cameos, but I mean...
What? Really?
Yeah,
I thought his was the worst by far.
Really?
I mean, he didn't do anything interesting with his character.
No, we'll talk about that in a minute. Let me just...
I just want to counterpoint you after you're done.
Oh, jeez. But yeah, my other issue with it is I just would have left the original stuff alone. Because this movie I felt like was good enough and it should have just sort of stood on its own. I realize there's a desire to try to keep the old fans happy, but I don't know if you noticed, but that's not going to happen anyway. I would have just said the hell with it and make my own movie the way I wanted.
In almost every new film of an old property, they do that every time. There's like...
Yep.
Weird little callbacks or lines that are the exact same from the original.
Oh yeah, but it
almost always annoys me in every other movie, except for this one. It didn't bug me in this one. I don't know why. Maybe I was just in such a good mood and I was just having such a good time with the film itself that they.
Wow, you were in a good mood. Hang on, I think we should focus on that for the next hour.
Yeah, don't worry, it's not happening too often.
You bitter piece of. Oh, sorry. I mean, it's. I'm not saying this was Into Darkness levels of referencing a past film in an annoying way, but...
What's wrong with that tribble? It won't be important to the plot later on.
I was referring to the fact that it references, or it's just a shitty remake of Wrath of Khan. And I never got to that level with this. There's no... It's just, I feel like they did a good enough job, and this cast did a good enough job. I don't know that I needed to see the old cast at all. And maybe that's because I get a lot less clouded by nostalgia than some people, especially ones with a first name, Mike.
Birdman Dodd.
That aren't on this show.
Even with... some of the cameos, yeah, I felt like they could have done a little more with them, or don't bother, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the don't bother case, and then I...
Oh. Mind you, I will say this. I thought the Harold Ramis one was a nice touch, and it wasn't obtrusive, and only a true fan's going to notice it.
Also, that's a good point. I think that's one that's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's, yeah, perfect, well, fine.
And that's another thing, too. Actually, one of the big arguments against this movie is a lot of people were saying, Harold Ramis would be spitting in his grave. His daughter, Violet, came out and said, all right, y'all need to shut the fuck up. Because my dad would have loved it. He would love the fact that people are coming together again. My dad, don't you dare speak for my father again.
Well, people... seem to have forgotten that Harold Ramis really understood and worked a lot in Hollywood. I mean, he knows how this works, and he really think he would have been more than fine with it. That was an odd sort of thing. I think he would have been happy in the end, and I don't think he would have had a problem with somebody else taking over the reins. It's bittersweet, but most people that have it happen when they work on a franchise and move on at some point will tell you that it ends up being kind of flattering because, I mean, you know, it's usually people who are inspired by you that want to do it. So last question, actually, on my sort of cameo topics. I just want to flat out say I was not a fan of the post-credit sequence. Because
I don't like the fact that they're setting that up as the bad guy.
It's a step in the wrong direction.
Wait, what? What was the post credit sequence?
Are you serious, Robot? For real?
I've seen it twice, but I thought they were just mid credit sequences.
No. At the end, you see Patty listening to a EVP, which is electronic voice phenomena, and she stops the tape and looks up at Holtzman and everybody else, and they're like, what's Zool?
So as Roebuck apparently gets acquainted with seeing the film.
Seen the film twice. I just have not seen, I did not bother waiting to that because I didn't think there was.
Oh yeah, because, you know, there's no credits sequences or anything after credits anymore. I mean, that's not a common thing.
Yeah, like, I understand.
See,
that.
I thought it would have been a lot earlier in the credits. Like, I was surprised it was right at the end.
Yeah, that's a little odd. I probably would have moved it up. Anyway, I mean, my issue is it feels like a step backwards, and I think it's opening itself up to a new sort of wave of vitriol if you decide to just reuse Zool or Gozer or anyone else. I think that might be a mistake.
I hope they give him a new form of the Destructor. Do not give me Stay Puft.
They're not going to after. I think they've done their Stay Puft like reference
now,
if they used
Gozer, and if they used Evo Shandor, like from the video game, and there's a Gozer cult, I'm okay with that. I'm totally okay with that, but I'm glad they didn't go to Vigo the Carpathian, but have them do something original.
Definitely would have been a mistake.
But having them do something original would have been a lot better, though.
Yeah, so I mean, we don't know that this is going to be the next movie. Maybe that was just a cute kind of reference, that kind of thing. That's my hope. I just think that if you decide to remake the originals using similar or the exact same characters, be they villain or whoever, then you're opening yourself up to, I think, more valid criticism. Mm-hmm. We know how Into Darkness turned out.
Yeah. But anyway, so let's talk really briefly about some of the other things that have been involved with this. There's the cartoons, which... Now, there was the Filmation, which wasn't based upon the movies. There was based upon a 1975 live-action show called just Ghostbusters, and it involved Spencer and Tracy and a gorilla Jake.
But Tracy what will we call it after 1984 Ghostbusters comes out? How will we name any of these anymore? I'm so confused.
Well, there's the real Ghostbusters due to a lawsuit and people just getting pissy with each other.
I was just being a jerk to somebody's criticism. But anyway.
Super
duper Ghostbusters.
But it's a show that I actually kind of enjoyed. I mean, the Ghostbusters from that era, Filmation, for those of you that don't know, is the same company that did He-Man. I want to say, what other cartoons of the era did they do? Oh, they did Brave Star. Basically, any cartoon that used a lot of similar-looking animation, guaranteed it was the Lou Scheimer company.
Yeah, Filmation does not have a good reputation within the industry. But it's funny you bring them up because Paul Dini just did a podcast where he absolutely laid into them a few times. So.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. but yeah, so they'd go around and hunt ghosts with their ghost gummers and their devices, fighting prime evil with robot skeletons and all these walking cliched ghosts. It was a fun show, if kind of stupid.
Wrong show, apparently, because that sounds amazing.
Well, one of the big problems is with it is all right, an average episode of a cartoon show is what? About 22 minutes, right? Every time the Ghostbusters transform, it takes a minute and 22 seconds.
Oh, they have like transformation sequences?
Yeah, they would go to an alternate. They go to an alternate ghost dimension, and they'd get all dressed up in their new gear. It was ridiculous, but it took up way too much of the episode. There's just a lot of plot holes. Actually, if you want to see more about this, there's a great
plot holes with the gorilla. Catching ghosts.
Giant lizard. Anyway, if you want to see more about this, there's a great there's a great channel on YouTube called Retro Blasting, and they do a whole thing on the Filmation Ghostbusters as well as the original 1984 Ghostbusters when it comes to merchandise and the actual show itself. But yeah, so there was the 86 cartoon, which Ryan had mentioned there was J. Michael Straczynski's work in there, which I'm pretty sure he wrote the Collect Call of Cthulhu, which I want to say was in the syndicated run of the show, which was in the second season of 65 episodes.
For the record, I despise the show, so. So we're clear, I watched it, but oh man, I don't have good memories.
There were some really good episodes in the first two seasons. After that,
yeah,
it starts to drop off, because like you do get some really cool bad guys like Sam Hain, which is the pumpkin headed embodiment of Halloween. You get,
I remember that, yeah. The stuff I remember most is just the fact that they yo-yoed so many of the voice actors in and out.
Yeah, like Lorenzo Music to Dave Coulier and all that.
Yeah, I know. Like, oh, that's by the way, funniest story I can remember from this show is the character for Winston Zeddemore is in this animated series as well. So Winston's in it, and Arsenio Hall was cast as Winston. People may not know this, but one of the other people who applied for the job was Ernie Hudson, who lost out on his own role.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up, actually. Oh. That's depressingly sad.
Yeah, that's...
Oh. I can see why they did it, because they wanted maybe a younger, hipper voice. But although, it's funny, though, if you go back and watch Ghostbusters 2, watch his character design and the real Ghostbusters animated show, you'll see a remarkable difference. Same with Janine. One of the huge things that plagued the Ghostbusters show, and this was learned from the documentary that's on one of the discs, actually, is the Ghostbusters television show had a lot of problems with children's rights groups and a focus group. I think they were called Q Focus. So they completely ruined the character of Janine. They made her more nurturing and motherly. Slimer had to be a focus of the show primarily.
Duh.
They wanted to get rid of Ray's stance at one point because he was quote-unquote useless. they wanted to have Janine's glasses rounded because sharp things scare children. Let me see. What other brain buster ideas did these people have? There had to be sidekicks and... Do they have to bust ghosts? Can they fight aliens or stuff like that? It was just it got really weird with
this. No, because one of those things might be real. Sick burn.
And then even J. Michael left the show. He's like, I'm not doing this anymore. Screw you guys.
Yeah, he got tired of all the restrictions and just being yo-yoed. Yeah.
And then eventually he came back. He's like, okay, I'll do it, but my way now. And even so, then, he left again.
Words will never express how much I hate Slimer in that cartoon series.
It sucks, because eventually in the show's fifth and final season, Slimer and the real Ghostbusters, it became such a different take in animation quality, in story quality. The show just absolutely nosedived.
My favorite episode of the entire series is the one where Venkman got really mad at Slimer, and he got so sad he like left and like thought he was useless. I loved the first half of that episode. It was great.
Unfortunately,
he finds a purpose and like.
I like when they fight the ghosts of Christmas blank.
They're my favorite. There are two episodes I really like, for sure. That. And they were ones. These are ones I would actually show people to get involved in the show. The one is called Citizen Ghost, where it basically tells what happens to the original Ghostbusters uniforms after the first movie. They get possessed because of all the Stay Puft goo on them. They tell Peter, like, hey, throw these things out. He's like, yeah, I'll get to it. And they become possessed. So they try and hunt down the real Ghostbusters. And that's how they meet. That's how Slimer becomes a friend, because he starts hanging around the firehouse. Ugh. Another one I would show is Collect Call of Cthulhu, not Cthulhu, because they weren't allowed to use the Necronomicon, because it was, quote-unquote, a real book. This is what the focus group had told J. Michael. He's like, oh, it's real. He's like, no, it's really not. They're like, fine then, show me a copy. And hilarity ensued.
Which is even funnier when you consider JMS as an atheist.
And eventually they defeat Cthulhu by using Coney Island and a circus wheel. But it's really, 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 really cool. They also involve other mythos enemies over the course of the show. They do mention H.P. Lovecraft by name. Another episode, I can't remember the name, but the bad guy, like, it's the Boogeyman. I want to say that's maybe in the first season, where basically they have Egon overcome his fear of the Boogeyman, and it turns out he's a real ghost. he kidnaps children and scares them to death and everything. And that's something I really liked about the cartoons. It never shied away from the fact that some of these were occasionally dead people, or these are scary things.
Bruce Willis.
Yes. Although with Extreme Ghostbusters, they would later retcon this, where they'd say eventually the ghosts just became monsters again, and if you got shot with a proton pack, it didn't hurt you, which is kind of weird. Now, Extreme Ghostbusters is a show I don't have a lot of experience with. I'm watching it now on Hulu, but they do have a cameo, I think in the series finale, the original Ghostbusters show up, and they obviously battle against a new threat that requires both teams to fight, because the original Ghostbusters went their own ways. I think Ray's a used car salesman. Winston works for the city. And I think Peter, I'm not sure what he's doing. But they got all the original voice actors who were alive to come back and do it.
They probably go and fight Bozer the Bozerian.
No, they fight Gozer's little-known brother, Bull Gozer.
Women's right?
Bull Gozer.
It's right.
But yeah, so one of the things that I've been waiting almost this entire podcast to talk about, merch. And then we'll talk about some of the other things like media and stuff like that. Ghostbusters has this really weird, fascinating history with me and merchandise. Because as I mentioned very early on in the show, I got a lot of Ghostbusters toys for my birthday. And one of the biggest toy companies in the 1980s and 90s was a company called Kenner. Kenner did the original Star Wars line.
Never heard of it.
Kenner did RoboCop. Kenner did Jurassic Park in the 90s.
But Kenner,
one of the things they did and what made the Ghostbusters line unique and yet suck at the same time is they were gimmicky. The original Ghostbusters had a proton pack you could put on their back, and it even had a workable kind of proton stream, and you got like a little ghost with it. But then you start getting things like fright features or spinning ghosts or spinning slimed heroes or stuff like that. Just really weird gimmicky things that would require another piece to activate, or you'd press an arm and their facial features would pop out or whatever. But you always got really cool ghost designs, but they were almost never in scale. Like Slimer's as big as the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, for example. And this was in the era of slime toys. So you'd get, like, Mattel, who currently holds the Ghostbusters license, or one of them. They'd be producing all these slime toys for He-Man. For Ghostbusters, you had ectoplasm. It came in, like, 5 different colors. And you'd use this stuff on your toys, but you could never get it the hell off once you had it on there. But they always had, like, they had your Firehouse playset, which was a toy I never owned up until recently. I'm actually working on getting my original Firehouse back, because I know the guy who sold it to, and he's willing to sell it back to me, so...
Six times the amount.
And you know what? I'm going to pay it too. That's the sad thing.
Wow. Maybe you could pay Andrew and I out of the... Oh, anyway.
But it's one of those things that... Playsets were one of those things that not a lot of series got them. Because after a while, like... Kenner also produced, I think, the Robin Hood Prince of Thieves toys, and for some reason they just repurposed the Ewok village as Sherwood Forest for their put-together playset.
That's amazing.
But although it's weird though, that playset works better as a Star Wars playset than the original does, because it's scaled up to be bigger. But anyway, I don't remember much about the real Ghostbusters toys, or not the real Ghostbusters, Extreme Ghostbusters stuff, because the character designs are so radically different. The toy line that I'm more familiar with now is Mattel. And Mattel, like I said, has sent me several figures for this. One of the things that really impresses me, especially with the new movie, is how well the figures look. The sculpts on these figures are amazing. In fact, the hardest one to find is... Can you guess which Ghostbuster's the hardest? Holtzman.
Oh, go ahead.
Finding her is near impossible at retail.
I'm not surprised.
I got really lucky that they actually sent her to me. But yeah, like the detail on these figures, great sculpts on the face. They actually look like the actresses. Good details on the proton packs. You can take them on and off. Good detail on the uniforms. And it's nice to see figures in that 6-inch scale that look nice. They got great points of articulation, and they work with the rest of the classics line. Now, Mattel produced Ghostbusters figures under Maddie Collector, which is their collector's baseline, where you'd see stuff like the original 4 Ghostbusters. They actually have a re-release at retail right now. The hard one to find is Egon because of Harold Ramis, and then Bill Murray's figure, Peter Venkman. So I got both of those luckily at $20 a piece, which is what they normally retail for. But I've seen Harold Ramis's figure go for as high as 80. I've seen Bill Murray's go for around $60, which is insane. But they also, one of the things that I think the new Ghostbusters missed is how I was talking about play sets before. The original Ghostbusters had the firehouse. In the new movie, they have the Chinese restaurant. When the Ghostbusters Lego Dimensions set comes out in September, we get the Lego version of the Chinese restaurant, but there is no version for the mini figures right now. You do get a trap which doubles as the subway, and the Proton Pack technically has a play feature where you can take the mini ghosts you get. They're called Ecto Minis, and you can put them inside the Proton Pack and project those images on the wall to catch the ghosts, quote unquote. And it actually compares fairly sized well to the original Kenner Proton Pack, but the newer one is a lot better detailed, though it does seem a bit smaller in terms of the pack, but the wand is a lot bigger, which I actually thought that was actually kind of neat. I'm trying to think of what else. One of the other companies produced something kind of funny, and this comes from I think it's Running Press. They produced a little micro proton pack which makes sounds, and you can get this at like Barnes and Noble or Amazon or what's the Chapters up here in Canada. And it's kind of neat because you can technically put your proton pack onto any action figure in that scale. So if you want to have a Ninja Turtle wear a proton pack, you could, and in fact, they've actually had Ghostbusters and Ninja Turtles crossover in the comics with zombies and Transformers from IDW, but I'll talk about that next, actually, I guess. But now, overall,
leave the damn Transformers series out of these stupid crossovers, goddammit.
I like some of them,
bad
but
enough,
not all
I gotta
of them.
Tolerate this horrible Revolution event. Anyway.
Anyway.
Mask.
But yeah, I mean, overall, I'm fairly impressed with what Mattel has done with the line. I really hope we get more role play toys out of it, because I would like a bigger version of the Proton. I'd love a collector's version of it. Not going to happen, though. There is a company up here in Canada producing a movie accurate Proton pack with an optional electronics upgrade. I think the company's called Anos or Andros for about $600 Canadian. And that's a really damn good deal, because to build your own pack, like I said, you can do it for about $150, but to get it movie accurate and to have sound effects and everything, that's a little bit harder. In fact, actually, there's an interview they're talking with, I think, Ernie Hudson. He saw a proton pack that when it fired could shoot a laser and it could shoot smoke at the same time. Oh. And it could cut through the smoke. He thought that was really, 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 really cool. I've seen proton packs that are as loud as any car stereo. I've seen them that they make sounds. The proton wands actually move. I've seen PKE meters actually able to pick up electromagnetic disturbances. So the Ghostbusters propping is, I think, really cool. And Maddie Collector did a trap, the ecto goggles, the wand, and the PKE meter over the last couple of years. They don't do much stuff anymore. I'm kind of hoping there'll be a new neutrino wand at some point offered by some company, but we'll have to wait and see. In fact, I know the Ontario Ghostbusters, which is the costuming and group up here close to where all of us live, is one of the few Ghostbusters groups that actually have new packs and new outfits. So if you want to see them, I think it's OntarioGhostbusters.com. I want to say they're actually going to help us out with our Dice Warriors, Terrible Warriors campaign, but we just couldn't get the logistics of getting Steve into a proton pack, which is unfortunate. But anyway, yeah, like overall, I'm fairly impressed with all the merch that's been offered. There are new vinyl pop figures from Funko. There's the Dorbs ones. There's a company called Entertainment Earth that produces these talking motion statues. I haven't seen them in person yet, but they seem pretty cool. And if you go to Walmart right now, this is probably some of the weirdest Ghostbusters merch I've seen. I'm kind of glad that I have it, though. I have Ghostbusters hand sanitizer.
Is it green?
It is.
Please tell me it's green.
It's green and glows in the dark.
Amazing.
I don't know why. I got that in like a Ghostbusters flash drive. I went to the back to school section. I picked up a Ghostbusters tin that gave me the movie, 5 episodes, the tin, and $5 off a movie ticket for $10. I got a 1 gig flash drive, a Stay Puft little, he lives in my car. He's like a little keychain buddy, and a bunch of other crap for like maybe $15. But I'm regretting not buying more Ghostbusters notepad shaped like the logo, and definitely more hand sanitizer because it's so huge. Like, you get such a good amount for a dollar. So, but anyway, that's, I could talk about merch all day long. So if you want to know more about Ghostbusters merch, Mike at thisweekingeek.net. Let's talk about video games.
Well, or you could mention one of the bigger pieces of merch lately, too, which is the Ghostbusters board game, which is excellent.
Yes, yes.
In a lot of ways, it's... I don't want to call it this because it seems like it's a negative, but it's not. But sadly, it's true. In a lot of ways, it's kind of a reskin of Zombicide, which is an excellent game as well. Another excellent co-op board game. But yeah, the Ghostbusters board game is quite, quite good. I highly recommend it.
And the sequel just got its Kickstarter fulfilled like about a month ago. So yeah. That should be on shelves before Halloween, I would imagine.
So basically you're playing co-op, catching ghosts, and it's the system's very similar to Zombicide. You can level up and you kind of get better, get experience, that kind of thing as you go on. So it's got some RPG elements, as well as it's played with some fairly good, I'd say, miniatures. So it's a game I would definitely consider a must-have. So basically the first game or the first set is, you know, Ghostbusters 1, your basic kind of set. The second set's going to be Ghostbusters 2. So, yeah, like you said, it was just finished up on Kickstarter. It's going to get funded. Not that that's surprising, because the first game was good.
And like, I think they actually have a set of minis for the new movie, too.
Not sure about that. I remember I asked somebody about it a few weeks ago, and there was no word. But it's possible it's come out.
And each figure has their own different stats, too. So if you want to play Kylie from the Extreme Ghostbusters or Rey from the original... you can mix and match characters. I'm very impressed with it. I'm actually trying to get a copy right now, and that's produced by Cryptozoic. And they produce a lot of really cool stuff. They actually just did a collector card series as well, kind of like the old school pay a dollar, get a pack of 8 cards. In so many different packs, you can get autographs from the cast of the movie. I have Ivan Reitman's autograph, which is pretty cool. I have another slot. They have one in every 300 packs has like a sample. So I have a sample of ectoplasm. It looks like the green mood slime or whatever. And they also offer artist sketch cards. I have a sketching of Janos from Ghostbusters 2 as the demon nanny thing, which is pretty weird. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really cool stuff for it. I mean, the video game that came out back in 2010 by Terminal Reality, I actually got a chance to visit the studio to see how much work they put into this. One of the coolest things I ever saw, they had a member of the Dallas Ghostbusters in studio. They had him dressed up in his full gear, and they just hung a microphone in a booth, and they said, run. So when you run, the Proton Pack sounds, all the jingles and the jangles, that's authentic. I think that's a lot of effort to put in for a simple sound effect that maybe 2 people might care about. Stuff like that. Plus, with that game script being developed by Ramis and Aykroyd, it more or less is Ghostbusters 3. As close as we're ever going to get.
I like the Ghostbusters game where you went up a set of stairs. for like hours. Best game ever.
It was better on the Genesis. The Nintendo version was broken, utterly broken. But yeah, like there was one for the Genesis, which was completely different, which was like a side scrolling platformer. You went to different locations and you could buy different ghost gear and all that stuff. You could buy night vision goggles.
It was actually kind of fun. It was more of a shoot 'em up sort of scenario.
Yeah, but it was a really good game. It's more expensive now, obviously, because of the movie coming out. I think it retails for around $40. Totally worth it, though. But you can emulate that as well. It's not available on any virtual console service, though, which is unfortunate. There are also the versions between the PS2 and the Xbox 360 and the Wii do differ for the Ghostbusters video game, so be aware of that if you are going to go out and purchase these. Although you can purchase the original Ghostbusters game on Steam right now for about $10. I'm actually doing a playthrough on my own personal gaming channel now on YouTube, so I'll post a link to that like later on. I think I'm just about a third of the way through the game right now. Let me see, what else is there to mention for kind of media that ties in? Comics. IDW is still producing comics. Marvel handled up to 191 issues in the 90s, for which I think was pretty cool. They've reprinted that into the Ghostbusters Omnibus. I think there's one or two volumes of that. As we mentioned, Ghostbusters has crossed over with Ninja Turtles, The X-Files, Transformers. I want to say even G.I. Joe, but I'm not sure about that one. They're all fairly decent reads. I actually really like the Ninja Turtles Ghostbuster one. Though the weirdest one is one called Infestation, where they fight zombies.
That was a crossover through every series, including Transformers and Star Trek and everything.
Yeah.
Did the zombies win?
It was complicated because there were two versions of Infestation. I've only read the one.
To be fair, in the Transformers one, Roberts actually managed to like tie it all back in during Dark Cybertron, which is pretty amusing.
One of the last things I want to talk about, though, is we have touched upon this briefly. I want to talk about all the good that the fan community does for this, but also to address some of the more negative things as well. Just let me take a drink here. So if you guys could carry this on for like a minute here.
Yeah, fan community and good stuff and all that.
Well, you look at all the Ghostbusters that show up for like
they raise a ton of charity, and there's a lot of other things that they did in this for sort of recent run as well. And there's certainly a lot of good fans. I mean, Ghost Heads and all of the other places defended the film when it was getting, you know, beat up before release. That's, you know, again, there's a lot of good, but it, like any fandom generally, I mean, the bad is just louder than the good. It's generally smaller than the good. It's just those are your vocal minority. And boy, were they vocal.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, considering I always see Ghost Heads at conventions, usually in like groups of like three or four people. They're always handing out. They're always willing to pose for pictures. I mean, even the Ontario Ghostbusters were willing to help us out. All they asked was for a small charitable donation for their time. And they donate the money to, I'm not sure what charitable organization, but they've got a good reputation, so I'm not worried about it. That's pretty cool. The fact that these guys are always around. Ghost Corp from Sony, I'm pretty sure, works alongside with these people to do a lot of special things. So I'm really glad when the fan community is good, they're really good to each other. Like Ghostbusters will show up to children's hospitals. They'll do a lot of like other charity work. Hell, even during the filming of the new movie, McCarthy, Jones, Wig, and McKinnon went to kids' hospitals dressed up as Ghostbusters to help kids that were feeling sick. That's pretty amazing. Another piece of the fan community, and I guess I wouldn't call this a fan community thing so much per se, but when I tweeted Paul Feig, his wife replied to me more than a few times, when I described how this movie helped me through a really bad point in my depression a few weeks ago.
I was really worried that this was going a different way. And, you know, she had to reply to ask you to stop using ethnic slurs. Oh, sorry. That's only at Leslie Jones Twitter, apparently, for me.
Yeah. It's so like it's weird. Like, I don't understand why this particular film generated this particular response.
Especially since, again, I mentioned it before, and just being blunt, this is not a huge fandom. I mean, I like Ghostbusters. I have no problem with it, but let's be honest.
It's not Star Trek.
Before this film was announced, did anyone care or talk about Ghostbusters often? Not
so much.
Often, sorry. I mean, you do a Google search for it, and there's, you know, the in terms of the fandom numbers, yeah, it's nowhere near the big ones. I mean, if something really, if they made a Jar Jar Binks solo film, I would understand this amount of hate, but
I would understand the amount of tickets I would buy for that. Am I right? Everyone agrees with me. They're agreeing to their iPods right
there's
now.
There's our topic show for next month. Write your Jar Jar Binks
fanfic.
Oh, you mean the sequel? Because I've already written the first one.
I got Jar Jar Binks erotica. Anyway, trying to think. I guess, where does the fandom need to go from here? Where does the franchise need to go from here?
Okay, the fandom is an easier question or quick question to me, and that is
off the cliff.
Well done. Oh man, you derailed my thing. I was gonna be serious, and oh, anyway, no, I mean, the fandom, just if you enjoy it, enjoy it. I mean, I hope that a rift doesn't arise that's happened in others like Star Trek. Although I think Beyond's gonna do a little bit to close that. With Star Trek, there was very much a rift between people who liked the reboots and who didn't. And that got way worse when Into Darkness came out, because it was not good. I just hope that doesn't happen with this, and that people are allowed to enjoy it if they enjoy it, and it doesn't become a, you know, flame war on every thread. I don't think that's going to happen, because you mentioned it earlier. I think the actual Ghostbusters fans, and when I say that, I mean, like, not the douchebags who, you know, flooded Twitter with hatred or racism or whatever. I think the, you know, like, the people involved with ghost heads and other things are going to be pretty accommodating, I would hope. I mean, I think it'll turn out better than some of the others, and way better than things like, oh, the Godzilla fandom, Andrew. No, just kidding. So that's a little easier. As for the films, I mean, I hope they make a sequel. We'll see. There's been no official announcement. I know the one guy from Sony kind of jumped the gun and, you know, immediately kind of jumped on that. Well, I really think it's going to depend on where it finishes in the end. Not to mention, I mean, DVD, Blu-ray sales, streaming, etc. That's going to play a role in it. It plays a role in anything at this point. The fact the film is not being released in China, I believe that's still official.
It's because anything in China cannot deal with the supernatural.
Yeah, so I think that hurts it. It's, you know, it's going to clear the 100 million mark this weekend, which I think is significantly less than Sony would have liked. But you're also got to kind of weigh things, because, A, you're talking about a franchise that hasn't been active in 30 years. B, I'm trying to think of the nice way to put this, and there's not one. It's not Fury Road. Like, Fury Road had that 30-year gap, but immediately was an Oscar contender upon release. And even it, you know, didn't make, you know, gangbusters money. It made its money back and more, enough that George Miller can do whatever he wants. But that was on, you know, a critical response that was universally positive, pretty much. And this is more middle of the road, and I think that's, you know, that's okay. By the way, on that subject, one thing I want to bring up, Wikipedia. So Wikipedia and a couple other places list the Ghostbusters 2016 reaction as, quote, mixed. How is 73% on Rotten Tomatoes and other places mixed? I mean, it then, you know, the same article details out how it got fairly good reviews. And I realize, like, part of this is... Well, no, I mean, I just don't get it. Sorry. Like, I feel like the article's written from somebody with a personal slant on it again. Because to me, that's ridiculous. I mean, 73% on Rotten Tomatoes is pretty good. I mean, Rotten Tomatoes doesn't count things at 65% or lower generally as a positive review. Which, by the way, has annoyed me in the past, but that's a totally other story. So yeah, how the hell is that mixed? I don't get it.
One guy in his basement, man. We didn't make him happy.
Name Carl.
Name Carl. His name is
Carl.
Oh, I thought he worked for cinema. Anyway.
Anyway. I guess, Andrew, your final thoughts?
I like the Ghostbusters. I hope they continue busting ghosts.
My final thoughts, I'll keep it fairly brief.
I hate you, Andrew.
I really want a sequel, too. I want to see where this franchise can go. I'm excited for the story possibilities. I want them to take a cue from the IDW comics with Ghostbusters, Inc. Take me out of New York. Bring me to Boston. Bring me to Atlanta. Bring me to Los Angeles. Show me something cool.
The Lost Light crew from IDW.
Like, no. There's so much that could happen with this franchise. I think the cast is wonderfully talented. And I'm excited to see what can happen next. So, once again, I thank you, Paul Feig and Sony, for giving me a new Ghostbusters. And I can't wait to see how many new little Ghostbusters are going to be around at Halloween this year. It's going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing little girls having fun like I did when I was a kid.
It's funny, too, because a lot of people that really hated this film ended up having to bring their families to it, which I find amusing. And a lot of them ended up enjoying it, too. I mean, yeah, certainly there were some that didn't. And that's fine. Again, you know, comedy is subjective, but...
Yeah.
You know, I think it's good that... it's a family event, and they released it at a... They released it at a bad time overall, but they released it at a good time for a family film, live-action one.
Yeah, like, I'm looking forward to seeing how much this can bring together certain families. I'm looking forward to, as we said earlier, this is not our Ghostbusters, but it's someone's.
Yeah, and I couldn't... who would have predicted that Star Trek, the first trailer for that, which, by the way, first trailer for Star Trek Beyond was way terrible. Worse than trailers for Ghostbusters. Who would have predicted that movie would turn out well? Like, I think Sony was kind of hedging their bets on it not being strong after this. And that's a little bit of what happened. I think it'll have longer legs than some of the other ones that got released, like Ice Age, which is an absolute disaster, and I weaseled my way out of reviewing, is probably going to keep dropping. And so, I don't know. I mean, I hope it has some legs. I do hope that they... I said this before. I just hope they stay away from redoing past films. I think they should... You kind of had your nods in this movie. Now just let it stand on its own.
Exactly.
Or fall on its own, whichever it does.
Pioneer your own way forward. So, yes, guys. So, this will be... By the time you hear this, it probably will be Saturday or Sunday. There will be a Nerd News this weekend. And then I should have a botched role in the middle of next week talking about licensed RPGs. And then more Nerd News. What the topic show is this month, we haven't decided yet. So we're still kind of talking that over.
Jar Jar Binks fan fiction.
As you guys can hear, I'm in a much better mood than I have been in months. I'm glad to be back. So looking forward to entertaining all of you this summer and into the fall. We are This Week in Geek, and we have been...
Andrew Slimer Roebuck.
Ryan the Uneven Flow.
And I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, I ain't afraid of no ghost.
Wanna see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't make it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with a shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh, my gosh. Freak. Die. Holy crap. Whoa. Whoa. Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content. As well, subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by replying to @ThisWeekInGeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Prono Bozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.